Today's show, break down the quarterbacks at the Combine. What's the future for Army-Navy? The MAC gets into conference realignment, and boy, did something happen at a women's lacrosse game.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You going to leave him out? I literally was talking to an AD the other day. I said, what are you going to do with Army-Navy? I brought this up separately. And I'm like, you got this situation. You can tell them to move. They're like, they've got guns.
Russ Dellinger.
It's not like we're a really real orderly show anyhow. In and out. You know, it's like a dive bar. People come in and out. You got to go smoke, you know.
And SI's Pat Forty.
There is as much chance of it impacting the playoff as there is of me winning the NBA dunk contest.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It's NFL Combine Week, gentlemen. How excited are we?
Not very.
Really? I mean, it.
I like the draft. And it's, you know, if you're covering the Combine, it's great because you get all those people there to talk to. What actually happens at the Combine doesn't usually interest me that much.
Ross?
Ross has left his seat.
Oh, Ross left. He's already quit on the show.
Yeah, welcome to the show, and all of a sudden...
Welcome to the pod, except for Ross. All right. Well, I'll tell you this, Pat. I get mesmerized by it. I am not going to lie. I enjoy... I start watching, and suddenly I'm talking about, you know, loose hips in a three-cone drill or something like that. It sucks you in. It's like watching like Ninja Warriors or something like that. It's like this weird athletic competition. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot going on in my life. I'm going to watch. Well, the
Ninja Warriors doesn't usually suck me in either.
But. No. Yeah. Well, you know, you're a man of like letters and you're high society. Some of us are not. We're just waiting for the next power slap to come along.
Yeah. Filling time between power slap tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah. So you think Ross just did he just quit? What do you think?
You know what? We're looking at his empty chair in a hotel room.
Just quit on us.
No telling. Yeah. He's like, maybe the cops came and got him.
This podcast sucks, and I don't even want to be part of it anymore. I can't really blame him. I can't blame him. All right, well, we'll start without him. We're gonna keep going. Yeah. Quarterbacks are gonna throw.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams is not, Drake May is not. So we won't talk about what they're going to do. But I wanted to run through a couple of these guys and try to figure out what you think of them as NFL prospects. And obviously a lot will depend, and their draft status at least, on what they do this week. It shouldn't, maybe.
Right.
But Zach Wilson played a group of five schedule his final year at BYU and basically got drafted because he had an incredible pro day throw.
How did that work out?
It hasn't worked out too well, but he did get drafted. Number two. No,
good for him for getting the money, for sure.
Yeah. And part of that is no one knows how to draft a quarterback. It's just.
Right. Yeah.
Like the most inspired pick of the last 10, 15 years is Brock Purdy last in the draft. The same people that made that determination also traded away a ransom for Trey Lance.
Yeah, it's the number two pick in the draft.
Three. Sorry. So yep. Nobody knows. Absolutely right. Nobody knows. I didn't think, you know, there's a million guys I didn't think would be good or bad or whatever. CJ Stroud, did I think CJ Stroud would have the, like, one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time? Maybe the greatest? I don't know. I'm sure it's Marino. Like
Marino.
No. Yeah. I thought he was pretty good, but I was not sold on C.J. Stroud, and he turned out to be absolutely incredible. So Bryce Young, you know, you're worried about the size. Some of it's where you go, all these different things. It's very hard to determine. So, but let's take our shot heading into the combine. Hey, Ross came back.
Sorry. Had to dip out for just a second, but I'm
hey, Ross,
back.
If the stress of, like, the show is too much, like, if you, you know, 90 seconds of paying attention, you need to like kick out and take a little break, feel free.
Yeah, I know.
We don't overwork here. We don't want to overwork.
We can get you crisis counselors standing by.
It's not like we're a really real orderly show anyhow.
No,
in and out. No. You know, it's like a dive bar. Yeah. People come in and out. You got to go smoke. You know,
it was pretty good when Dan tossed it to you and it just fell to the floor.
Nobody was there. Crickets.
No. Yeah.
I forgot. You don't watch the Zoom, Dan. You didn't see me scurry away.
I didn't see it. It's like I'm like a bad point guard at the end of a full court press, just hucking balls. Just maybe someone will be over here, and they're just not
chucking them.
Yeah, is that a player or a ref? Is that a teammate or a ref? Anyway, we're talking. What do we think of these prospects, these quarterbacks? We're not going to talk Caleb Williams. Not going to talk Drake May because they ain't throwing. They ain't throwing.
Mm.
They'll be there for interviews and stuff like that.
I do have a Caleb Williams comment, but
we can. We don't have any rules here. I mean, while Ross is present, let's talk Caleb Williams. Switch it up.
My only comment there is, do you remember like the amount of oxygen that was wasted throughout the previous, I don't know, mm-hmm. 9 months or so of, he may stay in school.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to go to the Bears. He's not going to go to the Bears. He's going to force a trade. His dad's going to buy stock in whatever franchise he goes to. It's like, wait.
You can buy stock in a franchise?
Well, whatever. No, he wanted equity.
Equity, yeah.
Oh, equity. Yeah, they don't do that. Yeah, they don't allow that.
No.
It was all pretty ridiculous. Like, I mean, all the things
and
were...
People, the number of people that were just parroting it, like, oh, Caleb Williams, he might stay in school. Like, no, he was never going to stay in school. Never, ever, ever going to stay in school.
USC has a nice NIL program. It doesn't have NFL money. Come on.
No. So, anyway, that was my comment there. The amount of...
Quinn Ewers came back.
Yeah, never going to be the first number one pick. Never, ever. Yeah, but not happening. Never. No.
Never?
I'll die on that hill.
All right. Generally speaking, we've discussed this. Only 58 juniors came out this year, down from 135 in 2019. And the average was 115 for about 8 years there. Dropped at 80, I think, last year, now 58. So kids are staying, but they tend to be third round picks, fourth round picks.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I saw an On3 story quoting different people, including the Senior Bowl, saying he thinks guys made the mistake. They actually took less money by staying in NIL, but NIL is keeping people in, but not when you're number one.
Right.
Generally speaking, it would not make fun. There's not an NIL deal for that. And you want to get the main thing in the NFL, especially as a quarterback, you want to get that clock tick into that second deal because it's worth a $250 million at least. It is now. It's probably going to be worth $300-350 million in a few years. So forget generational money. This is empire money.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to get going. So we don't blame that. But it is very interesting the number of people that are staying in college. If you take out the say 20 to 25 guys who are getting first round grades, you're down to about 30 kids who are willing to be, who are going pro, even if they do not have a first round. That's it. 30 players in the whole country. That is an amazing amount of people that are staying in college football.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating trend. I really do.
Yeah. Whether it's, but the sport is dead. It's not, totally sucks. Everything's bad. Mm-hmm. But
Awful having Blake Corum and his offensive line come back this last year. Terrible.
I got no enjoyment out of watching him. Was he good? Did he even play? Was he any good? Caleb Williams, you have any doubts on him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you have doubts about all of them. I have fewer doubts about him than I did with anybody last year. And I like CJ Stroud. Whoa, that was a revelation. I will say he won me over with the game against Georgia when I thought he was just brilliant against a great defense. Yep. And so I thought after watching that game, I was like, oh, that guy, yeah, he can do it at the next level. But I still didn't see what he did, you know, coming. With Williams, I mean, he has all the tools, no doubt about it. I think there's just got to be a maturation process. And I don't think it would be a terrible thing if his dad took a step back and said, son, it's now your career. Go ahead. And there's a little less managing, a little less stage parenting, perhaps, and let him go, grow up, you know, take some hard knocks, learn from it. He's a gamer. I don't think he's, you know, he's not soft. He's not a diva, I don't think. But I think he's probably been a little too managed to this point, and that'll probably change. And I think he's going to do extremely well when it does.
Yeah, you pick up the vibe around Caleb. And I remember seeing it firsthand visiting USC. You know, you pick up a pro vibe from Caleb for a while now, those couple years at USC, whether that was because he was in LA or all the NIL stuff. But I mean, he had like a team of people, you know, multiple like different agents and such. And then, of course, his dad is fairly involved. So you do wonder when you have players like that, if, you know, there's too many people around, so to speak, and there's too many distractions. But to get back to Dan's questions, which is, do you have questions or doubts about some of these players? I mean, I have questions and doubts about all of them. I mean, the draft always reminds me of like recruiting. I mean, you've seen these players more than you would high school players, but who knows, right? I have questions about a lot of them, if not all of them, in some capacity. Obviously, you have fewer questions than others. You know, Dan, I know you wrote about J.J. McCarthy and his kind of his situation going into the draft and into the combine. I mean, you know, he's one of the ones that I'm sure there's plenty of question marks, and is a good example of you know, what exactly are you going to get at the next level, and how does he fit into an NFL team?
Yeah, well, we'll go to J.J. then. Good transition.
There you go.
I like Caleb Williams a lot. I think he's going to be fine. He will. There's no hand holding in the NFL. Definitely not hand holding in the Chicago Bears. You get pushed off the cliff. There are no cliffs in Chicago, but you get pushed in the river or something. I don't know. Here we go.
Lake Michigan.
Right into Lake Michigan. Let's go to J.J. McCarthy. To me, every year the draft has one guy, at least, that just becomes the lightning rod of I believe in him or I think he's terrible. I don't know if you've seen this incredible. There's this incredible one video that pops up on social media of Merrill Hodge picking apart Johnny Manziel, and every single thing Merrill Hodge said was accurate. He's like, this guy doesn't. He's not prepped. He doesn't know how to run an offense. He doesn't know how to use his blockers. He's not much. He absolutely nails it. And then right as Merrill Hodge finishes, it goes to Skip Bayless. And Skip Bayless says, you'll never be more wrong. It's Johnny Manziel is going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to redefine, just polar opposite. Now, of course, Skip's wrong. You know, not a big surprise on who was right and who was wrong. But it was just so funny because you could not have two people believe more. And I would have been like, I don't know, man, maybe in the middle somewhere. But, you know, J.J. McCarthy, Johnny Manziel was this guy in the middle, Tebow, Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, Jamarcus Russell, Trey Lance. I don't know. Every year there's a guy. Maybe Bryce Young last year. Is he big enough? We'll see. Does he have a big enough hands? Remember Baker Mayfield's hands weren't big enough?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't throw a pass. His hand isn't big enough.
Yeah, Teddy Bridgewater's hands weren't big enough. His knees were too skinny. That was a good one.
Yeah, skinny knees. There is a guy that gets in the middle of the debate shows that everyone's got an opinion. And J.J. McCarthy is, I'm almost certain, this year's guy. Everyone's seen him play, right? Even casual NFL fan knows who J.J. McCarthy is because they won the national championship. And there are ample reasons to say, hey, 27-1 as a starter. He's really mobile. He throws well in the run when you need him to make an elite play. He makes one. He's got good arm strength, this, that. And then there's the other part of like, when did he ever really dominate a game? Is he absolutely incredible at any part of it? Like, if you're that good, would Michigan have ever run the ball 32 straight times against Penn State? Like, if you have the number one quarterback in the country or a top 10 quarterback, do you ever do that? And then you go, yeah, but if it's working and you have a quarterback that's willing to just hand it off that many times in a row, isn't that a positive? What about the leadership? You can go in any direction with J.J. McCarthy, and people will. And that's why I think his throws on Saturday will be really interesting. I think he's the most interesting guy in this draft, or one of them. Ross, your thoughts on J.J. McCarthy as a pro, or what he, or just that situation of being in the mix?
I think that as a passer, right, he's pretty dang good, right? We saw it in the playoffs. We saw the accuracy there throughout the season. You know, he's a little on the thinner side, right? I'm sure a lot of these quarterbacks are. They get to these NFL teams and then kind of beef up, and I would imagine he's going to need to beef up to take the hits in the NFL that he might take. And remember, and I think this was the case maybe in the championship game, he made two, like, kind of, when you look back on it, like, game-changing runs in that championship game to move the sticks. And, you know, you think about him doing that and running away from NFL defensive ends and linebackers, it'll probably be a little different. So he's going to have to make more plays, you know, with his arm. But he's shown the accuracy. And now I would bet that there are quite a bit of teams that are you know, pretty high on his on the list there. I'd like, as far as projections, they just kind of range, you know. I don't know what you guys have seen, but like mid second round, right, is some things that I've seen as far as projections for him.
I've seen anywhere like mid first to
top 10, second, right? Eight,
yeah,
really,
sixth to the Giants. Oh yeah,
wow,
yeah,
nine, right, to the six, Broncos,
eight,
right?
Yeah, eight, yeah,
ten, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, okay,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, he could go all the way up there.
Looking at some old projections, maybe.
That's why he's so interesting.
Yeah.
He's not, well, I mean, like, you could go, is Caleb Williams going to be good? Well, that's fine, but he's not dropping beyond two.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, he could go anywhere. And it's been like, I know Yahoo, our mock draft, Nate Tice had him not. I think he had him in the second round. Now he's got him in the top 10 or 12th, wow, or 11th or something. Mm. Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, had him not in the first round. Now he has him at eight. Mel, wow, Kiper says top 10's too high. It's all over the place with the guy. And so you go, I don't know. You only need one team to love you to get picked. Now, whether you pan it out, I don't know. But you just need one to and they need quarterbacks, and they love quarterbacks. So, Pap?
Yeah. I have no definitive, like, yes, he's going to be a star. No, he's going to be a bust. I like almost everything about him. I think he will interview great because he has charisma and he has personality and he has confidence and he has intelligence. And so all those things will shine through. His throwing, he's a good passer. I don't remember really ever watching a full game of his and saying he's an elite passer where, you know, there's just some inconsistencies. He will miss some easy throws. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes, threw four interceptions all year, although he also got away with laying one up at the very beginning of the Alabama game that could have been disastrous there because the guy caught it with, what, a toe out of bounds, I think, or something?
Yeah.
So, you know what? Yeah, he's a good runner, but, you know, yes, is he great at anything? I mean, his stats scream game manager in terms of passing yards, passing touchdowns, all that sort of thing. He is not ever, as you alluded to, Dan, just been like this overpowering quarterback. But that's also the offense they ran. You know, that wasn't really what they asked him to do. Can he? I'm not sure. I mean, I am nowhere near as sure about him as I am certainly about Caleb Williams and Drake May and probably Jaden Daniels and probably Michael Penix, but after that, could be right there, and I could end up being dead wrong. He could end up being a 10-year superstar, or he could be out of the league in three. I don't know.
That's why these guys, it's fraught. I agree. My number one concern with him is, does he do anything exceptionally well?
Mm-hmm.
I think he does a whole bunch of things well. Does he do anything exceptionally well? He moves well. You get him on the run, he can throw it. Maybe that's his best attribute, but that would be my one concern with him. But so, you know, is he worth a shot at 8? Is he worth a shot at 6? I'm not sure.
His accuracy on the run was really impressive in the playoffs.
Yeah, that is good. The only thing is even mobile quarterbacks don't throw that much on the run in the NFL.
Right.
Right.
It's a dangerous process. Yeah. You're much better off getting the ball out really quickly. Yeah. You know, I remember talking once to Michael Vick and he said, eventually they're going to get you. They get these angles. And, you know, he was talking about it like you think you can do it, but they're going to get you. And it's like, what? JJ is an excellent athlete. He is not Michael Vick, nor is anyone else in this draft. You know, it's a tough life. I don't know. He's 21. A guy like Penix, 24. Is Penix 24 years old? You know, still a lot of growth spurt, growth potentially in there. I don't know. They're obsessed with QBs, though. All right. Jaden Daniels, Heisman Trophy winner. Credible dual threat. Threw for a gazillion yards. Also, physically, doesn't look like he looked light as a college player. Slight of build. Can he handle that in the pros? But certainly a dynamic talent. Rosh, thoughts on
he gained like maybe 12 to 15 pounds during the last offseason before his second season at LSU. And you couldn't really tell. You know, he's just so thin. But he probably will gain 12 to 15 pounds more. That, I'm sure, is going to be the concern, right, is him getting hit and him getting injured because he is just really thin. He is slender. But, man, I mean, talk about a showcase. You know, he was really close. His team were close to, I think, having him leave, you know, for the NFL after his first season at LSU. And they stuck around, you know, decided to stick around. Brian Kelly, I think, put him on that plan, and man, did it pay off? Obviously, a Heisman Trophy and incredible numbers, record breaking numbers. So, man, he proved it. It's just how wary will teams be of his size, and does he run around too much? You know, you hear Pat said it earlier about in the NFL, you don't see it as much. I mean, Lamar has changed some of that. How we view that. But I remember when Lamar was at Louisville, Pat, probably you guys better remember how thin he was. And then he got to the NFL and it's like his neck is huge now. He's this massive man. Maybe Jaden will do the same.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think he needs to add some weight just for his own, you know, physical safety, so to speak. He's listed 6'4", 210. Gosh, where's the 210? I don't see it. But and it might be one of those things you're 210 in August and you lose weight during the season.
You'll get the full, you'll get the real weigh-ins.
Right. That part I do like. And I love when Charles Robinson tweets out the sizes and the weights. It's great. Yes, I do like that part of the combine.
Charles Robinson is our at Charles Robinson NFL, maybe it says. He gets the weights and measurements.
Yep. I do enjoy that because you can tell then, okay, how much were teams lying before, you know? So that's always interesting. But I really like Jaden Daniels. Super dynamic. Throws it great, I think. An exceptional runner. And he's tough. But there's, you know, probably to what Michael Vick was saying, you can take hits in college and then you take hits in the NFL. It's a little different. Even in the SEC, where there's a bunch of future NFL guys hitting you, it's not quite the same as when a 240-pound blitzing backer gets a clean shot at you and you feel it for the rest of the season, or a 270-pound rush end gets you. So, you know, just longevity, that would be, I guess, the concern there. But I like everything about his game. He seems to have a lot of moxie and a lot of confidence and an ability to rise to occasions, too. So, and he had to because that defense was so bad that he had to play great all season for LSU.
He and Caleb, both of these guys, get my grade out really high for me on the good at football category. You know, sometimes we forget who's good at playing football when we get into this, and he's exceptional at playing football. Whether that works at the NFL level, we'll see. All right, Penix, knee injuries, amazing talent, incredible career at Washington, elevated that program to the national title game. Thoughts on Michael Penix Jr.? Ross.
Yeah, probably the best game from a quarterback that I've seen this year. And I think Pat was there too, was the Oregon. What was him, his play in the Oregon-Washington game, especially late. But it was just incredible. Some of the throws he made, his accuracy deep is just awesome. But yeah, there's concern with the injuries, right? He's had a past of getting injured, but he seems so like mature when you talk to him, like just grown up, cause he is old. he was a 6 year, right? So he's like 24, 23 or 24.
Yep.
So,
yep.
He's got that maturity. You feel like when you're around him, he leads a team really well. Man, he checks a lot of boxes, you know.
Yeah, I love him. I just think he's a really interesting guy. I mean, I think he's a good guy, and I've enjoyed talking to him. Watched his career, you know, go through a lot of evolutions. I what Ross said, like he throws the most gorgeous deep ball of anybody in this draft class, bar none. And I think that's an important thing in the NFL because you end up having to throw those out there for guys deep, you know, one-on-one situations. And it's easier if you let them make a play on it than through making them have to make a miracle out of it against elite DBs. I was just shocked how poorly he played against Michigan in the championship game. I was like, I don't know. It all got away from him. After watching him the game before against Texas, when he was phenomenal, threw for 430 yards against Texas. Against Michigan, he was inaccurate. His footwork was bad. It was just like, what happened there? I don't know. I don't want to hold one game against him, but that almost is kind of the inverse of watching CJ Stroud and saying against Georgia saying, oh, yes, I see it. And now with Michael Penix, I'm like, maybe I don't see it. I don't know. I don't want to certainly, you know, discard him, but that did make me kind of rethink the whole thing with him. But I mean, elite arm strength, release, accuracy deep. Can he throw the short balls, and can he, you know, just not spaz out at times?
I felt in that Michigan game, Michigan got up early with those Donovan Edwards touchdown runs, and I have no idea, but it just felt like Washington thought they had to be perfect.
And yeah,
they couldn't just settle. They just never settled quite in. And really, they didn't have to be, because there's that long stretch when Michigan couldn't put the game away. But it just felt like there was so much pressure on Washington during that time. I don't know if that plays a role or not. Oregon, Bo Nix, kind of minus the injuries, but similar career in some ways to Penix. Obviously had a run at Auburn where he was like a legacy. Never was as great as maybe he was expected. The hype, the local hype down at Auburn, heads out west and puts up incredible numbers, incredible run with the Ducks. I see him as a real wild card. He could be really, really good, or he could just be maybe a product of a little bit of a product of Oregon. I don't know. I tend to think this is a pretty good player, though. Ross?
Yeah, his journey did remind me of Penix a lot, because I think you evaluate you look at him differently now, you know, after his last stop, just like Penix at Washington, Bo at Oregon. You know, he kind of beefed up himself. He showed some wheels like he kind of always did at Auburn. At Oregon, we saw him really, I feel like, develop more as a passer. And he really, thrived, it seemed like, under pressure, which wasn't necessarily the case again at Auburn. We saw at Oregon him really thrive under the pressure. But he's another one. It's kind of fascinating when you stack these quarterbacks up, who you would pick, you know, like JJ and Bo. Like I don't know who I would pick among that group when you look at them. He's older too, right? Just like Penix, he's a little older, more mature. Same thing. You get the vibe when you're around him that he could lead a team really well, and that you'd want him to be your quarterback.
Yeah, I kind of put him in there. I guess, you know, McCarthy, Penix, same category of the. Just he's extremely good. Like there's not much you can really pick apart. But is he complete? I'm not sure. You know, I think Oregon's offense did a phenomenal job of like making the field look really wide. And they threw a lot to the outsides, and he did that well. And they threw it plenty of bubble screens, that sort of thing. But, you know, is he a great vertical quarterback? I'm not 100% sure. I don't have the stats necessarily to back that up and make a declaration. But that would just be, I guess, my concern. Was there a little bit of that kind of Oregon offense that they run extremely well with Kenny Dillingham as offensive coordinator, and then with Will Stein this last year, that kind of made him look a little bit more capable than he's going to look in an NFL offense. It doesn't mean, you know, obviously he may land in a great NFL offense and it works out fine. But if he goes to a bad NFL offense and they say, hey, Bo, we need you to make it dramatically better with your own talents, I'm not sure that's going to work out that well.
We don't need to discuss all these guys. We'll get to more college stuff, but I'm interested to see what Michael Pratt of Tulane does. I thought he was
big arm, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Tulane. I'm sorry. Michael Pratt of Tulane. Spencer Rattler is back. People are getting excited about Spencer Rattler in the NFL. This is true. South Carolina got a NFL scout asked me about Spencer Rattler the other day. I was like, I don't know. I don't know. A guy's got potential. And then what I really want to see is I want the NFL to open like one of the windows at one end of Lucas Oil Stadium. Mm. Just one, the one facing east. One pane. And then I want them to give the ball to Joe Milton at the 20-yard line. And I want him to throw the ball 80 yards and then up. Just keep going up.
You right want the over, Uncle Rico, throw it over the mountains, throw.
Want to see me throw it over the mountain? Through the pane. And I want it to go all the way until it hits the front door of the red garter around the corner where 8 to 10 NFL scouts are. I've been told. You could find and be like, draft me. That if he can do that, number one pick to the Bears. And I don't know that he can't. Joe Milton he could be the biggest sensation in football by the end of this passing thing on this combine passing.
Well, and if that's the case, then shame on the NFL.
Well, let's forget about what his production or this. I like
forget
the
about
guy.
How he actually plays football.
But
good
I like
at football. Good
He's not,
at football.
I know. But the man can throw a football. The man can throw a football. It doesn't always go where it's supposed to go. He's not the best quarterback. But how many players have you ever seen more exciting when they just sit back and uncork one?
I don't think they even have to open the paint. He'll just blast it through the window.
He'll go, I don't even need to. He'd be like,
shatter
are you
the window
that?
With the
don't
ball.
I'll go to the next one that's closed. Yeah, I just want to see Joe Milton in a combine. Like that alone is something to see. I don't know. Guy can throw a football like no one's business.
Somebody last year, I believe it was one of the networks had a stat that said a lot about Joe Milton. This was, you know, fourth year, fifth year, whatever of college football. He had never thrown a touchdown pass on the run.
Yeah.
Like you might need to in the NFL.
Love him. I want someone to draft. I love Joe Milton. I don't care. I've always enjoyed watching. He's played a lot of places. I've been a Joe Milton fan since the first time I saw him just unleash a ball. Let's see. Somebody pick Joe Milton. He said project. Anyway, we'll be back after this message. All right. Interesting story by our Ross Dellinger. the future of the Army-Navy game. Not that there won't be an Army-Navy game. As long as there's America, we're having Army-Navy, as we should. But however, for, I don't know, X number of years now, it has had its own solo window on the second Saturday of December. Leads into the Heisman that night. Gets a terrific television number, 6, 7, 8 million people watch. It's pageantry at its finest. It's college football in many ways at its finest. It's awesome. Army Navy. However, we got a playoff coming. Could it get in the way as this playoff is expanded, especially going forward as the it's not a problem next year, but going forward, if they expand to 16 teams, and they try to, and if they eliminate the conference championship and they need multiple weekends of games in December, different things. Could Army Navy no longer have its exclusivity? And I believe Navy said the game's not moving. We're not going to move it to, like, you know, October 14th. This is our day. How do they handle it? Ross, what do you know?
Yeah, this is kind of been a long running conversation, especially the last few months, given the expanded playoff. So the game, I think, could be impacted in two ways. Number one, it could lose its, as you discussed, it could lose its standalone date there as the only FBS major college game on the second Saturday in December, the week after the championship games, because kind of low-level bowls, like the first, you know, group of bowls that usually kick off the season the third weekend, it's usually when bowl season starts. They're talking about moving those bowls up a week to make room for the first round of the playoff. The four first round games, three of the four will go on that third Saturday when you had those bowls being played. So to avoid those conflicts, I think ESPN and bowl season is talking about moving those bowls to the second weekend of December, which would obviously conflict and remove kind of the standalone for the Army-Navy game. So there's one way that it could be immediately affected starting, you know, this year. The other way is just how relevant is the game to CFP selection. Obviously, you know, the game is played 6 days after the selection show happens, and the current protocol in a four-team format was if Army and Navy were going to impact, like, the seeding in some way, if they were going to make the playoff, which obviously was long odds, but the protocol is to wait for that seeding that they're involved in. And given the fact that we're going to 12 teams, including an automatic berth for the group of five, right, that gives them more of a chance for an Army Navy to be in the mix. And so the question is, what do you do with that protocol? Do you wait? And then if they're somewhat in the mix, you wait to select the 12 seed until you have an Army or Navy in there, potentially, and then you have like a backup, you know, group of five, like the next best group of five, and you wait until the end of the Army Navy game to actually officially, you know, adopt a team at 12. So that's being kind of debated. So it's those two things that really will have an impact. Dan, you mentioned, you know, conference championship games and further expansion of 14 teams or 16 even. And that could add even more games, right? That can move even more bowls up. Everything could shift around. I can tell you this. Yeah, the stakeholders in Army-Navy, at Army and at Navy and at the American, Michael Resko, the commissioner of the American, they're not moving that game. It's going to stay there. It's certainly going to stay there at least the next 5 years, because that's they have a contract with CBS with a date specific clause in the contracts of playing on that date. So it's kind of a fascinating little wrinkle. You know, the expanded CFP is going to impact a lot of things, and this is one.
I mean, I love Army Navy. Everyone loves Army Navy. There is as much chance of it impacting the playoff as there is of me winning the NBA dunk contest. It's not going to happen. It's not a factor. You know, we're dreaming up. Find me the time, Pat. It's ever. Find me the time.
2015. 2015, Army was the would have been the highest ranked group of five team.
Yeah.
How about or not Army, I'm sorry, Navy would have been the highest ranked group of five
team. Navy could go undefeated.
Army they were ranked number 21 that in the selection committee's rankings that
absolutely
week. So it could happen, Pat.
Also, the slam dunk competition is not what it used to be. Not saying you could win it. But not what it used to be.
2015 was a while ago. Look at what it was. The landscape that we're in now. Find me.
You know, especially with the transfer portal.
The NIL game and the transfer portal game.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. They already paid their players. They already paid the players.
Yeah. Where's it gotten them?
You want an
F-16? They were the only people playing them.
Old Mrs. Jackson Dart's got an NIL deal with the private jet company.
Yeah.
You get an F-16.
That's Air Force. We haven't even Air Force
you can
doesn't
fly it yourself.
Air Force doesn't play in that game on
all right,
December 10th.
Navy's got they got planes. They got planes at Navy. They got boats. They got planes. You gonna leave it's them out? Not, I literally was talking to an AD the other day. I said, "What are you gonna do with Army Navy?" I brought this up separately, and I'm like, "You got this situation. You can tell them to move." They're like, "They've got guns. They've got guns." You need
anyway,
the West Virginia rifle team. They also have presidents. Yeah. They have senators. They have a lot. Yeah. They got a lot.
That's great. They're never going to be a factor. I will say this too. Beyond
hates
that,
America. He hates America.
Yeah. Right. If they, it's up to Army and Navy. If they say we want to be part of the playoff, ergo we will move our game, then fine. If they say we're not moving our game, therefore we will not be part of the playoff, fine.
That's fair.
Their call.
That's fair.
I think a lot of people agree with Pat. There's a lot of people probably in the CFP room that agree that you have to adjust and change. You know, a lot of these archaic things and these traditions in college football, to a degree, unfortunately, we're losing, right? But when you expand and when the money gets big like this, you got to change, and things are changing. I mean, soon enough, the SEC might go to whatever different, you know, format of schedule. You might lose some of these long tenured yearly rivalries. I mean, these things just change.
Yeah. And they have to, this is not a normal, they don't play on campus. So they set up the sites years in advance, at least a few years, and they make it it's like a bowl game. It's, if not more, like it's a lot more. It's a military recruitment event also. It's an entire thing. It's not just we're playing this game. It's we're going to go. They're in Foxborough. They'll go to, you know, they're in Baltimore. They're in Philly a lot. Newark, you know, it's usually in the Northeast, but they use it as an entire, you know, it's a whole thing. And I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. Ideally, you get both, but I don't know.
2015 Navy with a 17-point loss to Notre Dame and a 21-point loss to Houston at 9-2 was the top-ranked group of five team.
Yeah, but you have to so what I was doing, and I was eliminating the teams that have moved up from group of five to power five already. If you know, if I was doing it that way, I was reflecting the realignment. And when you do that, they should have been the but you're right. You have a point with the transfer portal and NIL, right? These days, it makes it harder for them, a lot harder.
Yeah, it does. College baseball has begun. College baseball. They had a game down at Texas A&M earlier in the week. Wagner, the Northeast Conference, I think they are.
Probably not a baseball power, I'm guessing.
You know, who knows? They actually lost. They had a 3-game set down there. They lost. What was it? It was pretty good. They lost 121-2. They lost another 17-2. This particular game, they only lost 2-0. But the game was delayed. The game was delayed. The game was at A&M, Blue Bell Park. A Wagner outfielder got stuck in the bathroom. The bathroom door would not open. He was locked in to the bathroom at Bluebell Park, and they had to delay the game. And then, according to reports, by the time he got out, Travis L. Brown, who covers A&M for the Eagle down there, said that I'll take it as the truth. Wagner's players gave a standing ovation when the guy finally came out to take the field, and then the Bluebell Stadium PA played a toilet flushing sound as the effect.
There you go.
I hope that's true. If not, I'm going with it. It's college. Welcome back, college baseball. Go ahead.
I got questions. Yeah. Like if he's in a stall, can't you crawl under the door?
No, it was the door to the bathroom.
The door to the bathroom.
How do you get locked in? Okay. How do you get locked in?
I don't know. Mm. I mean, this is College Station, right? Where the facilities are all like $9 gazillion. That should be state of the art.
Their baseball park is somewhat new. You know, renovated the last eight years or so.
I think he was
really
nice. He was having some issues, and he was just saying, "I'm locked in, so try to buy X some time."
I suspect.
And he didn't want to give up his start and role in the outfield.
I suspect. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not sure about this one.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome back, college baseball. I can think of no better way to the absurdity. It begins with this. It ends with a Jell-O contest in Omaha.
Which we will catalog. We'll cover.
Conference realignment never sleeps. Never sleeps in one that will certainly rattle the power structure of college athletics. The MAC decided to expand. The MAC, 12-team MAC, the stable MAC has gone 13 and added, of all teams, the University of Massachusetts as a full member. UMass needed a home for its football team. It had been a member of the MAC in football. From 2012 to 2015.
Right. They've already, second tour of duty.
They got kicked out because they refused to bring their basketball program and other sports. And then I guess they made up, and now they're back, full membership in all their sports, except hockey, and I think they're trying to keep lacrosse out of the MAC. But the MAC going to 13 MACtion moves to Massachusetts. I'm stunned at what this does for the MAC. I don't know. I feel like they've been looking through they've been watching like all the excitement of conference realignment and like,
really, let's get in on this.
We gotta get in on it.
We gotta get a piece of this.
Yeah. Nobody wanted any of their schools and nobody wanted in. Like it was just the most stable 12. It's just 12 schools. It's been that way for a long time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I mean, they have an Eastern, a Western, a Central, and a Northern. I mean, everything about this league makes perfect sense. And then I think UMass called. And they're like, they just like, oh my God, what? Sure. How's this work? I don't know what is the why you have a 13
really?
Team league? Why did you
want to?
Why did you add UMass? I don't know. Pat, thoughts?
Well, we were urged to do an emergency pod on this since it is your alma mater of which you take such immense athletic pride.
My comments are not going to go over well, so.
Good. You can get those guys that have the UMass podcast mad at you again. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Curry, Hicks, Sage, and Musket are going to be mad at me. But alas.
They have a good name for their NIL, though. What is it? Something with Paul Revere. It's like... anyway,
the midnight.
That's
ride
all they
or
got.
Something.
Yeah,
the midnight
ride. Yeah, that's all they got. That's good. Like I have. It's completely unfathomable why the MAC would want UMass to me. All you're doing is adding travel distance and expense. Like Buffalo is kind of out there, and now you're going way past Buffalo, going east to Boston. So or to Amherst. Sorry, but. Yeah, what exactly do they bring to the table other than the worst football program in FBS? Not much.
The thing that fascinates me most about this actually is there, aside from Notre Dame, there is only one FBS independent now remaining, and that's UConn. I think it's five independents have joined conferences in the last like 4 or 5 years. A trend that points to the CFP, the CFP access and CFP revenue, expanded CFP. Everybody's trying to get in the league so you can have that access and have more revenue. I didn't even know this until probably this week, but and we've discussed a little bit of it about CFP revenue distribution on the pod before. you know, but group of five schools get about $1 million. Power five get about $6 million. We knew that. I had no idea that independents that weren't Notre Dame get $300,000 from the CFP. They get a quarter of what group of five schools that are in conferences get. It's pretty wild. So this is all about, I'm sure, access to the CFP, all about revenue to the CFP as well.
700 grand? That's what we're going on.
Yeah, well, I know.
UMass switched conferences for like a four bedroom colonial and a nice suburb. Like, what are we?
When you add the access with
access, they're going to make the college football player. Yeah,
well, hey, at least you got a chance, Dan. Let's see. Come on.
Define again. I'll win the slam dunk contest before that happens.
I'm all for it. I hope they make it. They went 7-25 their first run in the MAC. They're 1-9 since playing MAC teams.
Not great.
Look, more MAC than the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. This is messing with my concept of New England United, where UConn and UMass merged their teams. Like high schools that are low on enrollment and they don't have enough for football. So they merged their teams, combo team, New England United would have been good. Still out there, still my dream. UConn, maybe then we have then they take on the MAC. I don't know. It's better for UMass football to be in the MAC than not in the MAC.
Yeah.
What is the point of this operation? I know I waded deep in this because we're talking about UMass and the MAC. But in terms of UMass football, like, what is the point? What are we trying to do here? Like 7-5 and go to the Pop-Tart Bowl? Did they even get to the
basically,
go to the quick lane.
Right? That's what you're going for. Like that much effort, you're going to take the basketball program and take it out of like the 9th best league in the country and put it in like the 25th best league in the country.
All about football these days, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is my thing. I think the original problem was they won the 1AA national title and they decided they should go 1A, now FCS, FBS. And they had these delusions of grandeur. This was going to work out and they'd start winning and they could get in the Big East or they could get in the American or whatever and it would all work out, and it doesn't work out. It was never going to work out. The infrastructure, the recruiting base, the budgets, the want to is nowhere near anything remotely competitive. No. UConn tried harder and was more successful, and they had to bail out basically to save their basketball program, which immediately won another national title. Like, put your resources as a school into things you can possibly win at.
Yeah.
And this is, to me, a reaction to an original bad idea. Now they do this. And part of it is because basketball has not been good for a long time. Part of it is the Atlantic 10 is no longer a 3-4-5 bid league. It's a one bid league, but like you're playing all your games in Ohio. You gave up on like Providence playing down in Rhode Island and New York City and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Washington, D.C. and places like that to be in a league that's in small towns in Ohio and Michigan.
It does not make sense to me. And yes, your numbers were darn near spot on. A-10 right now is the number 8 basketball league in the country, Mid-American number 24. A-10 sometimes is a two-bid league. There's been a few times in recent years. As a matter of fact, shoot, they had 3 bids in 2018.
Well, 10 years ago, they were getting 3, 4, and 5.
I know. Yeah.
But they aren't anymore. They got one last year.
They got one last year. They got 2 in 2022.
What do you think they'll get this year?
Got 2 in 2021. They'll probably get 1 this year.
Part of it is the A-10 isn't what it was. So leaving the A-10 in basketball, but it still puts you in the markets. I'll say this.
I mean,
the UMass, this is one of the things I don't understand about the MAC. MAC basketball is a lot of fun. And I know I don't talk about it here, but I actually watch a decent amount of it. I enjoy the Central Michigan team. My Tony Barbie, who went to UMass with me, his coach up there, and they're kind of fun. So I watch a lot of MAC basketball. It's pretty good. Jeff Bowles at Ohio, a lot of good guys coaching in the MAC. It's super competitive. And UMass, if you're the Mac, why do you want UMass? UMass should mop the floor with the Mac.
Should.
UMass's basketball budget is $2.8 million, which is not even enough. But they could up that easy. UMass has way more resources than these other schools. The average basketball budget in the Mac is $1.7 million. You got a 50% boost on everyone, and you could go higher. Like, they have so many more resources. They should win the Mac almost every single year going forward. If you're the Mac, why the hell are you doing that? Why are you adding these guys?
Yeah, I don't know. But your point about, like, UMass, you get good at the 1AA / FCS level in football, and you figure, well, we got to go bigger. Never, rarely has that worked out well, has it? I mean, Marshall, I think. App State, yep. Marshall, App State have at least made a foothold. We talked about Northeast Louisiana / Louisiana Monroe. I applaud North Dakota State for resisting the temptation.
Maybe Boise so back in the day?
Boise, except, gosh, I'm not even sure they were long that good at FCS.
These are different markets, the though. These are different markets. This is not Western Massachusetts.
No.
UMass should, and I know you lose less money, you lose more money as an FCS, as a FCS than FBS, but I don't know. It just, now you're altering all of your sports for this. To me, with college athletics, that these other types of schools, like a UMass, or even a UConn or anything else, what can you be good at? I think what you're trying to do with sports is create an environment on campus for students that create a lot of excitement, entertainment, serves as a marketing purpose, secondary, rallies alums, right? All those types of things. Ideally, it's football, right? Nothing better than Georgia on a Saturday or Michigan on a Saturday or Texas, on, right? But not everyone can do that. What sport can you do? The people will rally around that sport. UMass, it's hockey. They've won a national title in hockey. They've won Hockey East. They've been number one in the country. They put out NFL, NHL superstars. Like, put your money into hockey, even more and more money, and try to be the number one hockey program. Like, at least you have a chance. That's your upside in hockey. Basketball, you have an upside that can be pretty good if you get the right order going. I'm not saying Final Fours, but they should have been better recently. Football, the upside is not a lot.
No, it's not. I have never understood really the siren song of football success and money that is never realistic for a lot of the people that chase it.
So I guess it's good for their football program, but what does that even mean? Right. And it doesn't mean the football program's going to be good. I guess that'd be it. So, okay. But we will get some more Maction. 13 teams. Maybe they're on obviously they tried to get UConn maybe for football too. Can they get somebody else to make it 14?
Yeah. But I mean, UConn is never, ever doing that for its other sports. I mean,
no, you can't. I mean, they got a chance to win another in basketball. And the best thing they did was get out of the American and just say, screw it. We're going to play basketball and our football program suffers. So be it. This is what we can be good at. And they are incredible at basketball.
Yeah, men's and women's.
Yeah, and so don't. Sometimes a program that works in one place can't work in another conference. UConn basketball is the ultimate example of that.
Yep,
it was could not work in the American. In the Big East, I'm pretty sure Kevin Ollie was he in the? They were in the Big East still.
I think they were in the American, but that didn't matter. That was program momentum.
Right,
that was program momentum from Calhoun.
Five national titles. Yeah. I mean. They go back and boom, they're back to number one. I'll take that over my football program doing whatever.
100%.
Yeah. All right. We lost Ross now for good.
Ross again disappeared.
So he's part time. Let's call him
flitting in, flitting out. Yeah.
Yeah. Part time is doing his thing. All right. Final story here. College lacrosse, Pat. College lacrosse.
Man, we're hitting all over the place tonight.
Come on, man. We full service pod. Full
there you go.
Service pod.
You're going to give us indoor track here pretty soon.
Pitt and Detroit Mercy. We're having a women's lacrosse game this week. And somehow it was televised, of course. I'm sure everyone's watching. Did you see it, Pat? Were you watching?
I actually missed it.
Okay, sorry. All right. This is the express.com. I think it's a British paper. Yeah. It's like even below the Daily Mail.
Okay.
So
but take it's clearly it something it. Bad happened if the British papers are picking up something from a Pitt Detroit Mercy lacrosse.
I'm guessing the London tabs don't normally cover the Pitt. Didn't staff that one. Detroit. Not. Yeah. Anyway, this is how they write it up. Referees and officials for sporting events are often subject to ridicule online, but usually due to their decisions made during the games. However, one lacrosse official suffered humiliation while overseeing a college game between Pitt and Detroit Mercy as she appeared to poop herself on the field.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
The lacrosse official. There is a... So Pitt was leading 17-6 with 45.1 seconds on the clock. Cameras panned to the official who had a strange brown substance all down her leg, running down her leg.
Oh, no.
It's not known how long her legs have been covered while officiating, but to her credit, she finished the game before returning to the locker room. Hashtag That's, grit. No, Hashtag yeah. grit.
Not to her credit. I'm going to go ahead and say no, no, but go ahead.
The express.com feels differently. The Pitt lacrosse at Pitt underscore W lax, the Pitt women's lacrosse feed on Twitter X said after a goal that made it 16-3, I don't know, by a goal by one of their players, Jill French, she scored a goal. It was not Jill French who's involved in this, but they tweeted out, "What's that smell?"
Oh,
it's
no.
Jill French stanky leg after her first goal of the season. Stanky leg being a dance. Yeah. Pitt is now 2-3 on the season. Detroit Mercy is yet to win 0-3. If you are that ref and you're we're currently unidentified, and we'll avoid humiliating the person. It could happen.
Yes.
Do you just quit, Pat? Do you just quit?
Well, first of all, here's how I would have handled this situation if I were the ref.
I mean, there is a picture.
Oh, dear.
It's terrible. I mean,
yeah, I don't want to see the picture. But is there more than one? There's more than one ref in a lacrosse match, right? Isn't there two?
Yeah. Oh,
like so least. Here's what I would say when it's Pitt and Detroit Mercy and it's 17-6. I'd say, hey, you got this. I need to go. Give me a couple of minutes and get off the field and avoid the disaster. Hit the restroom. Take care of yourself and then come back before you have subjected yourself to this. Tell the coach, whatever. Say, look. You guys call your own fouls, whatever, but this is not something I'm going to do on the field, okay? I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll be back. Anyway, yes, now that it's happened, now that she did not do that, yeah, absolutely, you quit. Now you're done. You are now retired as a referee. It's over.
I mean, you risked it. Risk it for the biscuit. Gambled and lost. What a disastrous moment.
Gambled and lost. Yeah.
And for That's like it to loss. Be that, what was going on?
I don't know. That's why, man. Again, Pitt Detroit Mercy Lacrosse is not worth that to yourself.
They try just as hard, Pat, as the Alabama football team. Try just as hard.
Call she your was, own
she
fouls.
She was honoring the
here.
Athletes. She was honoring them by staying committed to the thing. Worst ref gaffe ever. I
really. Oh dear.
Also, yeah. If she only wore pants, like basketball
right?
ref,
you're in
football,
shorts,
football. Yeah, she had like a kind of skirt thing going. Oh, absolutely horrific. If you want to see the pictures, I don't even know what to say.
I don't.
But congrats, Pitt Women's Lacrosse Twitter account, social media for just trolling the ref.
Oh,
next
my
game
God.
That ref. If she does come back.
Yeah,
like Pitt's getting every foul.
Oh yeah, no,
yeah,
they're in trouble.
All right, we spanned it all. We spanned it all here.
Yeah, Ross participated in some of it.
Yeah, big surprise. Ross took off. Didn't want to handle the hard questions. Continue to share us on social media. Heading into March, March Madness. We'll do more basketball coming up. Everything else. Keep subscribing. Listen to us. Leave us nice reviews. We will talk to you later.